Windows just won't let me not use OneDrive or whatever. Like, it always finds a way to, like, force that shit back into your life, no matter how hard you try and tell it.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I've gotten pretty good at getting rid of Copilot, so...
Yeah, I realised I could delete that recently. I don't know if that's going to stick.
There's a couple of scripts that you can just easily download that will just wipe that shit off your computer for good.
I know what I'm going to do after this now. Player 2 Pixelcast episode 178. I am your hopefully appropriately adequately whatever volume level e-tuned host, Tim Henderson. Coming at you from a teeny tiny very very cold enclosure in Japan. It snowed yesterday. I bet everybody's envying my snow. Or our snow, or like, you know, middle Japan, so not too cold. Probably got really fucked up north. So you are wearing a tank top, so I'm assuming it is not snowing there.
No, it's not. We've had rain, though, for the first time in, like, 3 months, which is amazing. We had, like, 40 mils, so we're all really excited about that because everything is dry as balls.
Yeah, well, welcome to the weirdly non-sexual weather-based video games podcast.
Yes.
Although, we probably could do an episode on the best water effects. Absolutely. Like, water effects are nice. I don't think that's actually just me. I think that's, like, a fairly broad speaking fetish.
Yep.
Fetish is maybe a strong word, but you know what I mean. But no, we're not focusing. I mean, you may end up focusing on water some weird way, but no, it's going to be like, imagine a future if like certain games didn't have the impact or influence that they did, like different timelines into the future, like how might things would be different. And also for fun, the way Huso, I think, has been interpreting the entire topic is if we just told certain dolls to fuck off, would we get a nicer landscape? What do we think it would be like?
That's clearly the difference. You went positive. I went totally negative.
I have a couple of big games in mind that I would tell the fuck off that are going to be very, very hot takey. Yeah, but before that, we do have games that we've been playing, or at least trying to play, and mostly playing successful. We're gonna put Nintendo to the side. That's how much Huso likes what he's playing at the moment.
Yeah, so I'm playing Disciples Domination, which is the next game in a kind of long-running Disciples franchise now. It's going to be this BT kind of RPG around the PC space for a long time. It recently got a kind of reinvention with Disciples Liberation, which was the last game about 4 years ago, and this is a direct sequel to that. It's pretty good at not requiring you to have played the previous game. I dabbled in the previous game because I got a console copy and just for whatever reason really never jumped into it as much as I should have. It's funny how when you review games and you get forced to get through the slow bits at the start, how much sometimes a game will grab you, and that's definitely the case here. So it starts off quite slow. You know, there's a lot of exposition and world building and things like that that, you know, can get a bit snore-inducing because the writing isn't the strongest, you know. But once I got into it, yeah, it's just, you know, just that little bit. It's where I guess the money's spent when you're in that double A tier, which this game definitely is. Budget decisions have to be made, I guess, and they've spent it on the gameplay, which thankfully is great. It's a lot of fun. It's a role playing game. Kind of a mix between Heroes of Might and Magic and Baldur's Gate. So it's a CRPG style with these hex-based battles with your party, your units. So you have a hero unit, the main character, Aviana, who's the queen. And basically after the last game, she became the queen, saved the world, blah, blah, blah. But this is 20 years in the future, and she's kind of bored shitless. She hated being the queen.
I've got some Game of Thrones shit coming on here, except for like gender role reversing a little.
Yeah, so she just didn't like the responsibility. She didn't like everyone running to her with problems. So she kind of hid away in her little capital city, and the world's gone to shit in the 20 years because she wasn't paying attention. So she's been dragged back into action when a friend of hers gets captured, and the story goes from there. And it's an entertaining enough story. The writing isn't the best, like I said, and some of the voice acting's a bit, I don't know, a bit over the top, a bit hammy. But the story itself is quite interesting. You know, typical high fantasy sort of prophecy stuff and going on and that sort of.
So just looking at the screenshots, I feel like I have an idea of what the story is going to be like. Is that?
Kind of, but not really. There's a few different twists to it, okay? And there's this kind of meta game built into it, which is really nice. So you've got your units for combat, which is very much, like I said, Heroes of Might and Magic style thing, where you create a small army and you've got your hero unit, then you've got these different other units, and as you become a better leader, you get access to higher tier units, and you have like this kind of leadership cap for the amount of units you can carry with you. So you've got to manage, you know, how your army plays out, because each unit is worth a certain amount of points and you only get a certain amount of points to fill your army. So, you know, you might have a really high powered unit, but it uses a lot of your army space. So you've got to decide whether you want that high powered unit or whether you're better off getting three lower powered units, you know. So there's this kind of really cool meta involved with setting up your army. And as you, you know, gain experience, you get more resources to throw at your army and get bigger army and use the bigger units and things like that. It makes for a really interesting sort of challenge, and the game gives you a lot of ways to set, you know, kind of three favorites. So I've set up, you know, three different armies that I control and for different situations based on different enemies that I'm going up against. And it's very clear on how to do that. It gives you a lot of really good information. There's nothing hidden. There's no guesswork. It shows you on the screen before the battle which units are better to bring in. So it shows a little a shield icon if someone's really strong against your unit, or a broken shield if they're not. So it's a very simple system.
Thank God if they like went like full in depth on that on top of everything else, it would probably be too
No. It was very smart, and it's done in a way that, look, if you were playing, you could probably ignore it. If you had a favorite army that you put together, you could totally ignore that and just go. But, you know, you'll be more efficient, I guess. And I'd imagine once you get to the higher difficulties, like I'm playing it on just standard, but if you are at the higher difficulties, I imagine it becomes more essential. You have five different factions to choose from. And part of the meta is you have your capital city where you started to be a queen again, and you've got to start making decisions, and you got to try and keep the factions happy. So by that might be supplying them resources or, you know, getting involved in disputes, and as you improve your relationship with factions, you get access to better units, you get different cheaper prices to buy new units, those sort of things. So there's this kind of cool meta Heroes and Might and Magic thing going on. But most of the game you're playing as your queen character running around the world, solving quests like a traditional RPG. You've got five key companions that, you know, you can do their special quests so they get access to special powers. You can romance them. You know, all those RPG-y things are there. So I really like the mix it's come up with. It's balanced. There's a few little, like, glitches, you know, some sound glitches and the occasional game breaking bug where it just crashed a bit. Luckily, it autosaves very quickly. And also, I'm playing pre-launch, so I'm assuming there's a day one patch that's going to
also worth noting, I believe this game drops around about the same time as this podcast does, actually. So it should be out now.
It should be out now. I'm tempted to go back and play the first one properly now because I'm really enjoying it. It's not going to break the world record for, you know, it's a solid CRPG with some good ideas put together in a, you know, a nice package that should be easy to digest for people that like this sort of game.
And it's going to run on anything.
It runs beautifully on a handheld.
My 12-year-old PC that I just replaced last year would have been able to play this without breaking a sweat looking at the requirements. So
it works beautifully with a controller, which a lot of these don't. It works perfectly. I guess the turn-based grid combat really helps that. But it works beautifully on the handheld. So I've played it on the ROG. I've played it on my PC. It's great. I'm really enjoying it. If you don't like the turn-based combat thing, that'll be your biggest turn-off. But if you kind of want something slightly different to Baldur's Gate, and it's also much smaller than Baldur's Gate, I'm almost finished, and I'm at about 35 hours. So
that's a selling point these days, dude.
Yeah. So I'm definitely in the final chapter now, in the roll home, and I'm about 35 hours, and I've been pretty thorough. I probably could have streamlined that a bit more, but they gave me heaps of time to review this, which is lovely, got to say.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I originally picked it up, if I'm completely honest. I said yes to the review because I want to get in good with Calypso before Tropico 7 comes. But but I'm really surprised by it. I thought, yeah, I'll do it. The RPG, yeah.
Walking away with a thumbs up on its own.
Yeah.
That was what, Disciples Domination?
Yes, Disciples Domination. On PC, PlayStation, Xbox, I don't think it's on Switch as yet, but I think the one before it eventually came to Switch, so it's probably coming down the line to Switch.
Unsurprisingly, the previous one, if you are interested, Liberation, is on sale on Steam at the moment. That probably would not surprise anybody.
Worth a check
out. Another thing that may not surprise anybody is that I've like picked up the I'd say the second weird game for review this year has been I didn't put my hand up for Mugenics. I fully respect that guy's work, but I've never actually clicked with me, Boy or Isaac. Yeah. So kind of let that one slide by. Don't really need gross cat mutations on my screen either.
Yeah, that one looked odd.
So instead, I've taken the more familiar weird to me, I guess, in the form of Romeo is a Dead Man.
It sure does look in the trailer like a Suda 51 game.
It is a Suda 51 ass game. I mean, at least vibe wise, you know. Like, I mean, I've been up and down as well. I actually really liked Killer 7. Go like way, way back. Also, I super enjoyed Shadow of the Damned. Also, really enjoyed writing about Shadow of the Damned. So this is one thing I'm kind of excited to like write about this game if I get to the point where I can fucking write about it. So peeling back the curtain. A little bit. I mean, a couple of things holding me up here. One, when this key became available, it was like coinciding with my 10th anniversary, and I was like, yeah, I can take it, but I'm not going to be able to, like, the first weekend where I probably play a lot is not going to happen. And then I've found maybe a memory leak or something that has just caused the game to chug sometimes, like, be unplayable for like stretches of time that has also somewhat held me back. I don't know. Once it happened after 20 minutes, once I like got to play for like an hour and a half before it happened, but as far as I can tell, I think it's a game. I went and played some high-spec demos of other stuff, and my PC was handling that fine. I mean, I'm playing this on an RX 9070 XT. It should be more than adequate hardware for this game. Yeah, for the most part, it is. But yeah, if you don't know who Suda 51 is, get yourself familiar with who Suda 51 is. Yeah, this is a strange game stylistically. Actually, I think this is the thing with him, where like things feel stylistically all over the shop, but they've clearly got a coherent vision, like kind of somehow tying them all together. And I feel like to a certain degree there's an amount of like love letter to like just, I want to say, 70s sci-fi schlock.
Yep.
Kind of bringing this whole thing together. So you're playing a guy called Romeo. I think his surname is Stargazer. I'll probably have to double check that before I write anything. Who's just like some small town sheriff's assistant, and you just find a body on the road who turns out to be a girl called Juliet, and they start dating, and then weird stuff happens, and all of a sudden she turns out to like maybe be some like time traveling monster, and then now you are part of the intergalactic FBI. Not actually called intergalactic, it's like space force. This is where the word schlock is like intentional, and it's not. Yep. Schlock is an insult. Like, clearly Suda knows what he's doing. Like, FBI makes no sense when it's some sort of weird, like, post-Earth space force. And we're just throwing the letters FBI in there. That don't mean anything anymore. That's no longer initialism. That's just FBI for FBI's sake.
Yep.
Space, time, force, whatever. And you're basically transferring around different periods of time looking for some secret society type crazy people who are like, fuck you, like, basically, yeah. Time criminals. So one level could be taking place in the early 90s, and then you're going to be in the 70s, and then different locations, like back and forth between that. Speaking of the stylistic differentiations, this is probably quite a smart move on Suda's end, because I mean, the style is all over the place. It initially presents as like a fairly, not quite triple A, but at least like current gen worthy, like 3D action game.
Yeah.
But he does a very good job of like very much keeping this to like set stage arenas, and then like the actual like mothership where like you do a lot of the story stuff and talking to people is just straight up like 16-bit blocky 2D like top down graphics. The game has a weird fixation with Katsukari. this was actually known, I think that game actually the first reveal revolved around them eating curry. It's like you get your mothers on the ship, and then you kind of always do the actual cutsu to the pork cutlet, and this is a weird game where you like dip the cutlet into the oil and then like have to time it right to get it out, and like the katsu is a buff We'll say just the quick aside, a lot of the buffs in this game, like, they're too hyper-specific and not useful enough, and, like, it's too fiddly to get to them, and they could probably have streamlined that. But no, the whole game is just, like, a quick button press to, like, get the cutscene out at the right time, and it's, like, done in an extreme, like, just 2D anime style for some, like, just, like, food porn anime of this, like, pork cutlet coming out every time. And then, like, the character faces in the portraits on this, like, super blocky 2D thing, and, like, this kind of, like, mid to late 90s PC Windows kind of like high res 2D art. It is all over the shop, but it all sort of congeals together into this thing, which is, when it comes down to it though, it is actually just like a very strange action game where you're slashing up a lot of zombies. And most of its strength by a long shot, like, just does come like from these vibes. If you need to like be like willing to like eat up what Suda and his team are putting down.
Like a lot of his games.
Yep. And I'm totally cool with the strangeness. I am pretty up, and it's hard for me to like be completely optimistic, completely, I've forgotten English, the mind, even-handed, let's say, on this, again, because I've been having these weird frame rate fluctuations. And like, I've had extreme cases where like the game is just like frozen for 10, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, like just extreme. But I've also had moments where it's like, this doesn't feel quite as smooth as it needs to be. And a part of me thinks like that also, like, that's excavating an issue where the game's design is like kind of two approaches are like locking horns with each other. Where on one hand, a lot of these enemies take a lot of hits, you can get absolutely swarmed.
Yeah.
With these zombies, and then like they'll be like shooting weird like things that shoot pools of like just kind of pussy poison ponds like around the place. They'll actually swarm you, and a lot of times in small corridors. But so it kind of like throws enemies at you like it's a Devil May Cry or like it's a Platinum game, but it doesn't have the animation fluidity to like back it up. It's I don't know if it's actually animation priority or if they just don't have the budget to like blend everything together. So if you have like just pulled out a firearm and like you can't dodge right away, if like, oh, I finished shooting and I need to move, and you're like still waiting for him to put the fucking gun back in his belt before, oh no, I just got hit. Like shit like that happens a lot. You can definitely get swarmed, and like it needs a parry, actually.
Yeah.
Because you get backed against the wall like these crowds, and there's no way to get out of it, and you're like, your health will just go down very, very, very quickly. Which is a shame, because again, stylish is all get out. Like the violence in this game is just spectacular. It's not actually that bloody, because they use just a lot of like pixels flying everywhere.
Yep.
To like capture the energy of like a Kill Bill like decapitation, but not quite as gruesome. It's kind of more of a light show. Spend a lot of time doing that, running around. And also, like, for some reason, of course, you find a TV that then takes you into some backstage world where you're, like, running around Tron in, like, this under area, like, to get behind locked doors.
I can imagine someone listening to this going, that's never seen a Suda game. And they're going, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Yeah, it really is the sort of thing you need to write down first. Like, yeah.
And everyone that's seen a Suda 51 game goes, makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I will say, though, it feels like a hammer of like weird creativity has been thrown down, because the game is called Romeo is a Dead Man, but they straight up just referred to Romeo as Dead Man.
Right,
which is a major character in Death Stranding series as well.
Yeah.
And Suda games are weird in different ways. Kojima games are like anime with Hollywood sheen weird. Suda games are more like my mind is all over the place. I went to art school and I have all these film pop culture references I want to throw in everywhere. Also, Romeo himself is kind of like this kind of crazy conspiracy theorist, almost like cultish type, into all this stuff, whereas his uncle is a genius scientist a la Back to the Future. He said he likes saying Great Scott a lot. He gets effectively, I want to say killed, maybe not killed in multi-dimensions, but they find a reason for him to become like a patchwork thing on the back of your jacket that talks to you. Because, you know, the current trend in action games is to have a talking character.
Yeah.
Alongside you in some capacity, quite often attached to your person after you had that head on you in God of War back in 2016. So it's been going for a good decade now. Voice acting is actually pretty decently done, is limited. Mm. So when you're actually in gameplay, you have to read the pop-ups. So they've done a pretty pretty good job of, like, what I'm saying with the 2D graphics as well, like, while it's stylistically bouncing all over the place, pretty smartly allows it to have this sense of control and sheen while also probably working pretty cleverly within what I imagine is a tighter budget than you would expect from.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a Japanese voiceover or a English?
I haven't actually gone in to try and change it. I've let it be in English by default because it just okay. that seems like it's supposed to be in English. Like,
yeah, right. Yep.
I did make a mistake once of doing Final Fantasy 16 in Japanese just because, and then it was like the, I was too deep to change it later on. I was going, this doesn't feel right. Like, I actually think English was maybe supposed to be that one.
Whereas Yakuza, it's
yeah, oh, Yakuza, if you choose to play those games in English, you'd better be dyslexic or something.
Yeah, yeah, there's some serious problems going on if you choose English for Yakuza.
So, no, yeah, I don't know if I recommend this one or not yet. Like, I am really fluctuating. I've, like, had moments where I was going, okay, I'm cool, I'm figuring this out. There are some other quirks of combat, like things called bastards. I'll let reviews in a couple of days explain exactly what I'm talking about when I say there are bastards and you have to grow them from seeds. that also like help out. Like they definitely know that there's some difficulties because really even the review notes say you need to go back to the ship and power up. Wish that was a bit more straightforward, like when you were talking about how in Disciples a lot of that stuff is super clear.
Yeah.
Appreciate Suda's style. Wish it was a bit clearer as like, how do I get my HP level up? I really need that now because that seems to be compensating for like, again, like the combat actually feels pretty good until you like come across the shortcomings. And if they'd done a better job of designing the encounters around what the combat limitations were, that would be a non-issue. It's the sort of thing that drags us down from a game I would be looking at giving an A- down into like probably the Bs. Hopefully there's nothing broken to drag it down further than that. But the vibes are excellent. Like if you look at that and you go, that looks weird, I want to play the weird thing. Be aware there's going to be some like rough corners in like core gameplay itself, but it'll deliver on the vibes.
I think anyone that knows Suda's going into this knowing what to expect. Well, not knowing what to expect, but expecting.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. This was a game I was actively interested in. It's not like it was a random thing that showed up in the inbox.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's always a crapshoot with Suda, I think, in some way.
I would say this. The vibe of it, though, does feel like, I'm assuming what Digital Foundry and things say, but this does feel like probably a console one if you can go that way.
Yeah.
Unless it turns out like they cannot hold the frame rate. But based on the probably memory leak issues I've been having, maybe that is going to be the smartest way to... Yeah. I expect, unless there's something up with the port, this is what I'd recommend as a PS5 number.
Yep. Cool.
Anyway, I will say right now, though, I will not erase any Suda 51 game from existence. None of those... The quality has been mixed over time, but you've got to...
Yeah.
Hand in my heart is I'd rather have that mixed ass quality in something interesting than like a bunch of just really solid vanilla... I feel bad for vanilla as a spice. I feel like vanilla gets given a hard drive. But vanilla has now become English for normal or uninteresting.
Sadly.
Yeah. Vanilla type titles. But, we'll take a short break. Have some water, maybe some rum.
Possibly.
When we come back, theorize about erasing just certain games from existence and like how we think things may be better or worse. But we're probably going to try and make things better. I'm going to be
positive.
I'm going to be positive with my changes, yeah.
Yeah.
Spoke about a whole bunch of games during the break, most of which we're probably happy to exist though, so we're gonna leave Dead Space be.
Yeah. Dead Space need we need more Dead Space, if anything. We don't need less Dead Space. We need more.
Yeah. Or actual Dead Space, or like one of these Dead Space clones like hit just a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But no, basically, you know, there's certain games that like serve as landmarks one way or the other that kind of like alter the space or like set trends in motion. And this probably changes a bit from country to country, and we're in that regard, we're probably going to be like fairly Western biased.
Yeah.
But we're just going to run a little thought experiment here and see what would happen if we just like removed certain things, like how drastically... I mean, move almost any game and certain with influence and certain things are going to change. The thing, the broader picture is like, would we get somewhere similar if that game did or did not exist?
Yeah.
And then eventually we're going to have fun and just say, wish this game didn't exist. I'm going to imagine a world without it.
Yes.
But first, let's try and do this somewhat chronologically and like go like with some really early.
Early stuff. Like how early?
How early?
Yeah.
80s or 90s?
Right.
I mean, we can't go like all the way back to Space Invaders. That's like just fucking up a little bit too much shit, I think.
And we're trying to make the world a better place for this thought exercise, aren't we?
Well, it doesn't have to be until we get moved. Oh, well, we'll see.
We'll see. Well, I mean, I guess if we're going super early, the thing I think that probably had the most direct influence on games in the, I guess, mid to late 80s is that Italian Plumber.
How long would have it taken for platformers as we know them to come about?
To come about without Mario, right? So I think it's hard to undersell the impact that game, specifically, not even the first Mario Brothers, not the kind of 2D one screen thing, but the actual first Super Mario Brothers had on just games in general. On like, it's still a legitimate, the concept hasn't changed to this day. A 2D platformer is still fundamentally the same as it was.
It's not the bedrock of gaming the same way it was in the early
90s. No, it's not.
But it definitely like put a lot of stuff on its back and carried it through to where we are
today. For a long time.
I do wonder like how long it would have taken us to get there.
Yeah.
Though, because like the whole thing that made it amazing, this is way back when like console and PC hardware were just radically different in ways they are not now.
Yep.
I mean, functionally, you could build a PS5 equivalent PC more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
I could not build a NES or Master System equivalent computer. And so a huge part of it was, I think, literally just the scrolling. Like, PCs just couldn't
do it. I remember watching a doco about the id Software guys, and they were with Commander Keen, and they were challenged. Like, that was their challenge, to make Mario on the PC. And the technical difficulties that they fought with Commander Keen to make a game that, you know, resembled Mario was enormous. It's worth chasing down. It's on YouTube, I think. But yeah, it's worth chasing down on how hard it was to copy that on a PC, which was undoubtedly more powerful hardware at the time when they did Commander Keen. But just wild that it was so difficult. Like, this day and age, the differences between PC, PlayStation, Xbox are minimal, except for, you know, the operating system, really. So, you know, to imagine that, that's really odd.
So, yeah, I guess it depends on, like, how important would jumping have been?
Yeah.
It would have, like, fundamentally... I don't know if it would have fundamentally changed Nintendo's position. Like, would Zelda have been bigger? Would have, like, we had more beat-em-ups?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like we would have gotten platformers eventually.
I think someone would have done
been
it.
Would have it been another year? Would have it taken half a decade?
And so many of my early fond memories of games are platformers.
Like, well, I so many scrolling platformer as well.
Yeah, scrolling like platformers. You know, there's the Donkey Kongs and the Earthworm Jims and the Sonics and, you know.
Because everything was a platformer until the Saturn and PlayStation came out, pretty much.
All the best games were platformers, you know, especially on consoles. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that made side-scrolling versus other, like, camera angles actually more common. Like, would the world be a lot more isometric cameras if...
Yeah, it's interesting to think, isn't it? Another one, obviously, in that era or a bit later is Wolfenstein. Like,
well, I thought about this earlier. It's like, even like, so Wolfenstein was the first real first person yep. shooter. Like, even if we took away Doom, how much of an effect?
Yeah, yeah.
With that, because like, Wolfenstein, it was popular, but it wasn't a.
No, it was proof of concept for Doom. And then,
so if we take. So if we take away Doom, then the yeah. idea of the first-person shooter already exists.
Mm-hmm.
But the mold for how to do it.
And for so long, the whole genre was called Doom clones. Like, up until Quake, every first-person shooter was a Doom clone. It's, yeah, you know, it wasn't a first-person shooter. It was just Doom. Doom
it
clone.
Yeah, it took like 3 years to come up with a genre name.
Yeah, yeah, it was odd. It was really odd. And even then it didn't catch on, you know. It was always just a Doom clone. Yeah.
I mean, that like, follows, like, down to some actually pretty decent Star Wars games, and then eventually, like, the Halo or Call of Duty.
Yeah. It really does. Still to this day.
But we still maybe could have had the Wolfenstein remakes that are, like, really, really, really good, maybe. Probably not, though, because all the stuff that would have influenced that would be gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to imagine another studio besides id taking the leap on something like that. It was obviously their DNA that kind of pioneered it in a lot of ways.
I find it interesting to think that, like, there was a time where a game where you just stared down the barrel of a gun was not an existing genre.
Yeah.
Like, somebody actually had to think to do that, and I don't know if that would have intuitively come across.
You had first-person games, like you had role-playing games, like Ultima and all that were in first-person.
A lot of like wizardy kind of click around.
Yeah, but you were kind of like, it was really slow, kind of screen by screen, you know.
Which is just literally a slideshow.
Yeah, yeah. So to make fluid action in the first person and bring you into the game in a way that people hadn't really experienced before was, you know, groundbreaking. There's no denying it.
I guess we just do actually jump forward a bit.
Mm.
See, for a second, I thought Donkey Kong Country, but I actually don't think very much would change if you got rid of that.
No, I don't think so. I think it's still following. Like, it's a very good example of what Mario did before.
And it was the biggest game in the world for a couple of years, at least in yep. the console space. But again, if you took away Sonic, the difference there, actually, maybe Sega may have had to leave the hardware space earlier.
Yeah, the Saturn doesn't exist without Sonic. Definitely the Dreamcast. Yeah, it was there. Because, I mean, before that, what, they had Golden Axe and Altered Beast and...
yeah.
Altered Beast wasn't awesome.
Altered Beast was not good. Like, I don't think I'd fight anybody who says the game was actually great.
It wasn't great.
One that, like, really has me, though, in terms of, like... Because I feel like platformers you would have eventually gotten there. First-person shooters might have taken a bit longer, I think, just because the hardware wasn't going to keep up with the ideas. We would have eventually gotten there. Street Fighter 2. Like, we don't even need to get rid of Street Fighter 1. Street Fighter 2, like, the one-on-one fighting game seems like such this hyper-specific... Even if Street Fighter 2 didn't have the fucking bug that allowed combos to happen, like, how different...
Yeah. The greatest accident in video game history, almost. Like, I don't know. Street Fighter 1...
Like, I don't even know if fighting games would exist.
Was terrible.
In any alternate capacity.
Yeah. Street Fighter 2 just... I don't know, it was such a thing, too. Like, it was the biggest thing on the planet.
God, it was... Yeah, it was...
By a long way. Like, it was huge. And it was all you talked about at school. Like, you know, I was in probably, what, 90, year 5 or year 6 when Street Fighter came out. And it was the sole thing you talked about. And then when Mortal Kombat came out, followed it, that was the next thing you talked about. But, you know, Street Fighter was the... was the catalyst for that, you know. It was wild.
Obviously, there's no Mortal Kombat without Street Fighter, and the only reason Mortal Kombat became more popular was because we thought blood and guts were cool.
Absolutely. Ripping someone's spine out was always cool as a year 6 kid, let me tell you.
But yeah, dude, it's cool as an adult.
Yeah, well, let's face it, it's awesome.
I'm just all but kind of like around watching that stuff happen.
Yeah,
no, I don't have an answer for that, but I do think like fighting games.
Yeah, I don't know that they exist.
One fighter, like we'd probably still have brawlers, but
yeah,
what, that entire genre may not.
Probably still Final Fight. We'd be up to Final Fight 14 or, you know, Streets of Rage 12 or something.
Yeah, Virtua Fighter Tekken, forget it.
Like, yeah. Just. Yeah. And there's so many.
You Virtua Fighter and you're still going to get Tekken or something like it. Like somebody was going to make a 3D fighter. That's.
They were. Yeah. That was always going to happen after Street Fighter. But yeah. It was pretty. And it's still to this day a genre that it's not as the biggest genre in the world, but holy shit, it's well supported.
It has its fans. Its fans.
Its fans love it, and I'm a fan. Like I'm not an esports player, but I really enjoy fighting games, and that comes from my formative arcade days of playing Street Fighter 2.
Or in my case, not wanting to go roller skating at the roller skating rink and just watching the kids who actually had spare dollar coins
to play Street Fighter.
Two arcade machines over there. Because I was thinking, like, even Mario 64. Landmark game, figured out some shit, but
yep.
Remove that and we probably just slow progress down by a couple of years.
Yeah, I think so. I think a 3D adventure game like that was always on the cards. I think there was a couple of attempts before Mario, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah, like the Jumping Flash launch with the PlayStation. It's just that's the one that solved a lot of things.
That's the one that solved all the issues that come with the
same
camera.
With Ocarina of Time, the weird one there is like that invented the lock-on targeting. It is wild to think like we were both alive and playing a good amount of games. We were thoroughly teenagers at this point, I would say, before fucking Z targeting became a thing.
Yep, that's wild. I think more modern, there's a certain game that I want to imagine never happened, and that's not a slight on the game, but I think what it started is problematic, and that's PUBG for a couple of reasons.
Oh, we've gone way more modern. All right, we've jumped super far forward.
We have jumped a bit far forward, but it was a mod, and it was a very clever mod and very cool idea that
so
created...
Success was deserved, so it's like...
It was deserved, like, and I don't want to slight PUBG at all. But the fact of what it developed into was Fortnite as a direct result. Fortnite, if you remember, was a tower defense game when it first came out.
Build fortresses and then...
Yeah, yeah, it was kind
Fortnite
of like...
Fortnite was a pun. It was literally a pun on building a fort and defending them at night.
Yeah, it was like a fancy version of a tower defense game. And then this Battle Royale thing came out of nowhere and then Fortnite became what it is. And look, once again, I feel... very mixed about Fortnite, but I think it brought in some stuff that's normalized some stuff in the industry that I really don't like. Season passes, loot boxes, all the nasty shit I don't like. At the same time, I find it hard as someone that appreciates the effort that goes into video games to criticize the gameplay itself because people love it. People really enjoy the game.
At least it's like well made. It's not fucking Roblox. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not dog shit. It's a well made game that has some really nasty stuff attached to it. That as you know, a dad or all that shit, someone that's got a conscience.
Honestly, some CEO somewhere would have gotten that stuff normalized at some point. Anyway, yeah. Everyone's like Overwatch is probably set up earlier. If you really want to, like, we can jump back to platformers here. What if we remove Jazz Jackrabbit? Not a game that. Is remembered all that fondly.
I love it.
Although it is wild. I enjoyed it.
Yep.
That is a game that sold fucking scrolling on a PC.
Yeah, it did.
That game ran, we had a 486 in it. Just, I didn't think about it at the time. I just looking back and go, that game ran really smoothly, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. It was a really well-made game, but yeah.
Was that something that gave Epic enough of a leg up? So Unreal is another one where, like, the game, it was pretty. It was like an impressive shooter for the time, not an all-time classic, but that is the game that started Epic on, well, Unreal. It's called fucking Unreal.
It's called Unreal. I mean,
this is where Unreal Engine came from.
It led to one of the greatest fucking video game battles of all time as an old PC player, and that's Unreal Tournament versus Quake 3 Arena. They both came out at the same time.
God, that was the same year.
It was the same year, like... And, you know, these things don't happen. Like, it's like when two volcano movies came out at the same time. It's like a weird coincidence, but it just happens. And
was it the same? Actually, was that the same year that fucking Armageddon and Deep Impact came out? Like,
yeah, I think so. You know, or we had, you know,
Ants and a Bug's Life. Like,
what? Yeah, Dante's Peak and Volcano. You know, at the same time. You know, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's one of those weird coincidences that created this kind of watershed moment in PC gaming, especially and first person multiplayer shooters, because multiplayer with both of those games became within the reach of everyone. Before then, it was, you know, generally people that had a lot of knowledge about PC gaming and all that sort of stuff. It was quite difficult, but those two games normalized things like GameSpy and server lists and things like that, that made it very easy for anyone to jump in as long as you had the internet or, you know, a network connection to play multiplayer. And like that this day and age, if a shooter comes out without multiplayer, it's a huge thing, right?
It's a statement. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's massive. Like it's just so ingrained in first person shooters now that you have to have multiplayer.
Right. Staying like relatively modern and like, cause neither of those games are like, it's weird. Like they were both huge at the time. Neither of them are necessarily all time classics. But it's like the stuff under the hood that kind of did.
Yeah, I think their influence is bigger than the games themselves.
Yeah. I want to throw out Metroid Prime there for that as well.
Yeah.
Not because it was copied directly, like nobody has made anything particularly like that. But I feel like you just get so many, especially the indie developers. So it seems like people who play games, not that many buy Metroid Prime, but it seems like a lot of the people who play Metroid Prime decided to become game designers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, we've talked about it before, the whole Metroidvania.
How much of that is actually down to Metroid Prime or these kids actually playing Super Metroid?
Or Castlevania, you know, like
Symphony of the Night particularly.
I would suggest Symphony of the Night has a lot to do with it. But also, yeah, Metroid Prime's probably right up there as well.
Again, like, remove that game from history and it's not affecting the people making the financial decisions, but I think a lot of the creatives, 20 years later when they're growing up,
yep, they go, fuck, that was good. We can do that again.
They're, like, still trying to, like, capture that way it inspired them, like, in their own work.
Yeah, yeah. A timeless genre, I guess.
Yeah. You know, we could just remove Halo and say there's no Xbox.
It really is.
Maybe remove Myth and like maybe there's no Xbox.
Like you know, Microsoft had they dabbled in games before the Xbox. You know, with things like Age of Empires and stuff like that, Midtown Madness, and they had a few developers working for them. But really, that up until that point, they were a Windows developer and Office. Windows and Office were their bread and butter. Okay.
Yeah, we remove Halo and the Xbox still would have come out, but it's hard to explain now
what just that meant.
How much that console lived and died by that one game being there at launch.
Yeah, really did. Because everything else that came out at launch was average at best. Fusion Frenzy was a fun party game, but
Jet Set Radio Future available at launch?
It was a little bit after.
Also not nearly mainstream enough, especially in the West. And the Xbox was not mainstream Japanese. So.
No. I think Jet Set wouldn't have sold. It's not a system seller. Nothing else that came out at launch was really a system seller. And that's not so. I really liked my original Xbox. It had a lot of great stuff on it. But when it launched, it was pretty bare bones. Halo was the ticket.
I just straight up want to say, like, obviously it's only anecdotal and can just be based to, like, my read of people I knew at the time, but I feel probably 70% of the people at least I knew who had an Xbox probably would have had a PS2 instead if Halo were not what it was.
Yeah, I guess I ended up, because it was that time in my life where I couldn't afford a gaming PC. I was, you know, 19, 20, and you know, I just couldn't afford a gaming PC. So the Xbox felt logical to me as a PC player for my entire life to be the console of choice. And that's where I went. I really enjoyed my first two Xbox consoles. I think they were great. after that, things got a bit iffy, but you know, and I had money then, so I went back to PC. Funny that.
Although, you know, by the end of this year, like 32 gig of RAM is going to cost you like 20 grand. So you may be going back to, well, consoles.
Back to the consoles.
You literally have to be the son of a millionaire now to have a decent gaming PC.
Yeah. It's a bit sad, isn't it?
I mean, we talk about like an entire, like the thing is like the entire first person shooter genre, like in terms of like watersheds, like it's basically Doom.
Yep.
Than Halo, because again, like more so than GoldenEye, like as much as GoldenEye was a big deal, Halo really figured out getting this shit. It's why, again, like that twin stick control didn't exist. And, Dreamcast got close with Kiss Psycho Circus of all weird things, where it kind of like the problem was the Dreamcast only had one analog stick, so kind of you had to mash the buttons on them.
I think Medal of Honor on PlayStation, like the very first one or two, used analog controls, but it was clunky as fuck.
I mean, it felt good on Xbox. Also, like regenerating health, like
yep. For
better or worse, like that. And I do say for better or worse, like I really liked how they did in Halo 1. I hate that it just became regenerating health over time.
Yeah. I'm the same. Like everyone took a good idea. It's much the same when Gears of War came out, right? And everyone was making cover shooters. You know, things get popular for weird reasons, and for some reason they focus on these very specific details and think that everything has to have that. And I understand the benefit of regenerating health, especially in a game like Halo, which is quite fast-paced action. It made sense, but it doesn't mean it's a fit for everything. And
I mean, like, because the game that I could re-raise, it would not make any difference to anything. Resistance Fall of Man 3, way better than the first two.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The first two I didn't like. The third one is fantastic.
Great. Yeah.
But brought back health kits and like realized playing it, like how much that alone changes so much of the overall design.
Yeah. Yeah. The simple game design choices. It's only with like time you look back at things and go, wow, that really does make a difference to how you approach things.
Yeah. And again, like Halo, I found was interesting because it made narrative, and I find a lot of games with like a, things need to make narrative sense the first time they're done.
Yep.
So in Halo, they actually still had health kits, but you had a regenerating shield on top of that.
Yep.
Makes sense. You're a guy in a BMX helmet and some weird space armor.
Yeah.
Sci-fi, it's not like Call of Duty where, like, you know, the blood just kind of fades away and you're like all better again magically, which is basically how a lot of first person shooters. Or like Batman Arkham Asylum, like where he like had all his Batman tech to like see stuff and then like every other game copied it.
Yeah.
But it feels like the only reason that mechanic ever came about was because Batman having the tech to do it.
Yeah, that was one of my early criticisms of the Tomb Raider reboot. She had that kind of instinct vision that kind of highlighted shit, which, you know, in the later games you could turn off if you didn't want it. But, like, it's like, what is Lara Croft's reason for this superpower? You know? Because that's what it is.
You just need one game to justify the mechanic and then like it just like magically slides into everything. Anyway, as a PC gamer, I guess we threw out the one like game that has probably affected things so you more than anything else, which would be Half-Life.
Yeah.
And not just because it influenced game design, but because, you know, Steam.
Yeah, Steam. Half-Life 2 was the first game on Steam.
If Half-Life 1 been a huge success, we probably never would have had any of that. Like,
no, it's really.
Imagine if Sin had been the really big shooter. That.
yeah, and it's been fun because I've been watching my youngest. He's recently just gone and played through all the Half-Life games. So he played
Black Mesa, I assume.
Yeah, he played Black Mesa, and then he played Half-Life 2 and all the two available episodes, and then he played Half-Life Alyx on the VR. And he's still astounded by how good those games are.
That's an interesting thing because I can go back and play Half-Life 2 and go, this is still really good. But like, I would need like a fresh eyes of somebody who did not.
He didn't play
either it. Did not play it alive at the time.
Yeah, and he goes, this is still a great game. Like he said, obviously the free aim thing, not looking down the sights, is a bit odd as a modern first person player, but. He said the game is just so good, and he loved it. He's played Half-Life 2 now twice since he's played it through. Like He loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Is he like actually like headphones on in front of the monitor? Is this like you've got your hand me down original generation drug ally like lying in bed?
No, he's at the computer, sitting at the computer with his headphones on. Loves it. Absolutely loves it. You know, and he loves the Ravenholm level with the gravity gun and the
Ravenholm level is very good.
It is very good, you know. But he loves it. And then every time he gets to the end of episode two, he goes, surely they can't finish it there. You know, so now I've got this kid. Now I've got this kid that every time we've got any sort of announcement, you know, festival or something going on, he's like, is Half-Life 3 coming? You know, so, oh, my poor sweet child.
Oh, man, you were barely an inch in my sack when I was asking that question the first time.
Yeah. Yep. Sorry, mate. I hate that.
Maybe the next generation will live long enough to see it.
The Half-Life 3. But yeah. Yeah. It's been wonderful to watch. I've just had a smile every time he comes and talks to me about how good Half-Life is. And I'm like, holy shit. That is amazing. This is genuinely amazing.
It is cool to like hear like holds up.
Yeah.
Cause it is just sometimes hard to be like,
yeah,
clear and level-headed about like how good is this still actually, because at the end of the day you have something baked in and a certain familiarity that you can never shake away.
Nostalgia is a powerful drug.
Not even necessarily nostalgia, like just familiarity. Like you've gotten over that hump already that is now feels way bigger than it did when you did, and like that will already always be forever scaled.
Yeah.
That said, I think it is probably possible to go back to some games and go, wow, I liked this as a kid. What the hell was I thinking?
Yeah. Yeah, there are certain games that you go back and go, really?
Anyway, let's move on to like the ripping shit out of history for funsies.
I know what you're going to say.
What would... I'm sure you do. That's why I want to know what you want to say first.
Well, I already kind of said that PUBG for reasons explained. But I don't know. It's so hard to think of a game that I'd just... I mean, Roblox, just for the good of humanity, really.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, there are a lot of kids who really like it, but they will. The thing is, if you take away Roblox, they will find something else. They will find that there is a whole bunch of Minecraft. Other really like, cool creative stuff.
There is a
Minecraft,
whole...
Minecraft, as much of a jerk as Notch is, Minecraft is a good thing.
It's a great thing. It's been well-designed. It's very safe. It's, you know, it's very hard to say bad things about Minecraft, even though it's not for me. Roblox, however, I can give you... 6-page essay about why that shit's bad. So yeah, fuck that off. The world would be a better place.
It would. I'm going to go back further, and Huso knows exactly that I'm going to say Grand Theft Auto 3.
Yeah, I knew that
game that I did not like much. When, like after like I didn't have a PS2 at the time, so I eventually bought the PC version. All this hype and all this like living, breathing city, crazy taxi is a mini game, and I get there and I was like, the city's not living and breathing. Everyone's walking around like headless chickens. Basically, it laid a template for what first person shooters, open world games would be. That is so uninteresting to me.
Hmm.
Like just especially as a person who really loved Shenmue, and that had its own problems, but that represented a direction that I would have loved to have seen, like evolved and get refined, and like have certain kings walked out, and like none of the stupid looking for sailors stuff. I was like, I could not when I played Shenmue. I was like, God, I cannot wait until other people.
Look, I would argue that, and it's not a direct, but I would argue that Yakuza is a result of Shenmue.
Yakuza is, it, to a certain degree.
It's not direct one-to-one.
Yakuza
is always
this isn't exactly right, but this is, it definitely was a more accurate thing than saying it was a Japanese Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah,
a terrible way to market.
That was shit way.
Point is, yeah, Grand Theft Auto 3, combat was garbage, the missions were boring, city was gray, like,
yeah,
amazing tech demo, like cool, you could do all this stuff. Didn't like it, really did not like any of the fucking clones that came out for like the next 20 years. Like I so desperately want to see the trajectory that we would have gone on.
I do however think there have been some absolutely spectacular open world games that don't exist without Grand Theft Auto.
Probably, but we may have gotten something else equally awesome without
What I mean, like I stand by that Red Dead Redemption is the best game of that generation. I adore Red Dead Redemption. I adore Red Dead Redemption 2 for what it did.
I don't mind Red Dead Redemption. I like actually like Red Dead Redemption 2.
I think as a living, breathing world, Red Dead Redemption 2 is almost unparalleled still. But there's also been
the best horse testicles, but
there's been so many open world games that I've thoroughly enjoyed. So I don't want to say I would rip Grand Theft Auto, but I also at the same time, I understand the comments. Like Grand Theft Auto 3, to me, I played 1 and 2 and quite enjoyed them. It felt like a backward step in a lot of ways because it wasn't as fun instantly as 1 and 2. 1 and 2 were very instant, kind of arcadey almost, you know.
Felt harder to let yourself have fun because it was, in my mind, like trapped in this, like it's trying to like present enough of a living place where like it feels weird. I think I've said this before, like this is the first game that gave me real cognitive dissonance because that game opens with you kind of just getting lucky and escaping from a crash paddy van.
Yep.
And like the way you're supposed to behave in that game is the least logical shit in the world.
For a
person who is just like, just by sheer dumb luck, escape from police captivity. Like, the dumbest possible things you could be doing.
Yeah. I don't think they got it right until San Andreas, personally. And even then, like, San Andreas had problems when you look at it, but it was very good in that it created a role for you to play in the open city. Whereas Vice City was better, but Grand Theft Auto 3 really didn't give you a role to play. And I think
I still want to see the games that would have happened instead if like that had not been the trend.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting. But like I said, I've had so many great open world experiences that I don't know if they
think we would have gotten open world eventually anyway. The thing is that felt inevitable. Like we were heading in that direction. It took a while before there was some. So The Witcher 3 really loved. Obviously Death Stranding.
I love a lot of the Assassin's Creed games. They're open world, you know.
Yeah. I said I would love to have seen what they would have done if they weren't doing open world there, because Sands of Time was really good. What the fuck are you doing, Ubisoft? Like, actually, take a really hard turn.
Forget that shit. Give me Splinter Cell. But anyway, yeah.
You know what? I can't believe I'm saying this. I kind of want to live and see what the world is like without Beyond Good and Evil 2, because it's not coming out. What the fuck are you doing, Ubisoft? How much money have you just, like, sunk in this weird vanity project?
Yeah. I want it. I want it to happen, because Beyond Good and Evil is a personal favorite of mine. I love that game.
Oh, I loved Beyond Good and Evil. Yeah. What I want is just Beyond Good and Evil 2 that was not as ambitious as this one's clearly trying to be.
No, it just needed to be a flashier version of one.
Just do the Sid Meier thing. 30% the same, 30% better, 30% new ideas. Like,
as long as you include that photo mechanic and better graphics, I'm in. You know,
like just iron out a few of the edges, like make the world a little bit bigger. Like,
yeah,
I can't believe I'm like advocating for like the standard R sequel formula, but
that's all you needed for that. But yeah.
I almost feel like the open world for two. Actually, that was the other thing with like Rockstar is like as successful as that has been. And I've not been a huge fan of Rockstar's overall body of work over time. But like what I said about Suda 51, like I'm just like not all of these hit for me. Yep. I'm glad that all this weird stuff exists. Rockstar they didn't really hit for me, but Rockstar used to make a bunch of like kind of weird off the wall games.
Yeah.
Even like fucking Table Tennis.
Yeah, Table Tennis and then Midnight
Hitman,
Club.
Not Hitman, I'm thinking Manhunt, Bully, Canis Canemata, whatever it was called that year. Like, literally, like, we'd release a couple of games a year. How long has it been since they've made one fucking game now? Like, 8 years or something?
Well, it was Red Dead 2018?
2018, 2019, probably 2018, I want to say.
Yeah.
And while we are very confident that Grand Theft Auto 6 is... I think a shoe-in for coming out this year. I don't think it's...
It's this year. They're pretty confident,
That's a long... Use your vanity money to make some vanity indie projects. Like,
it'd be nice if they had a second team.
God, like, do the Double Fine thing. Yeah. Like, have, like, your own, like, miniature, like, game festival inside your studio. And then you just jam out ideas and then, you know, we're making games about clay pots tipping water on fires
and
on each other.
And I'm kind of on the fence with all that, too. I have a problem with Rockstar and the way they work in that it creates unrealistic expectations for every other person on the planet. In that they have unlimited budget, unlimited time to do what they want. and to do Grand Theft Auto, to do Red Dead, whatever they're doing. They've got unlimited time and budget. No one else has that, but they're expected to be up to that standard.
Well, 10% of consumers pay enough attention to understand this. A lot of people are going to be like, why isn't like, game look like this or have this scale or...
Yeah, yeah. And it creates this massive issue, which... And I am glad. I am 100% glad there's a studio that has unlimited resources and unlimited budget. I think that's good. I think it means they can push the envelope like no other studio can, and they do with every single game. They redefine what an open world is basically with every time they put out a game. But then they turn around and then people look at Ubisoft or whoever's doing an open world game going, well, I could do all this in Grand Theft Auto 5 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, whatever it is. Why can't I do this in your game? And without the understanding that, well, hey, it's amazing what you can do when you've got unlimited resources.
I feel like this is a very pointed rant of people saying that Red Dead Redemption 2 looks better than Mafia. What? Which just felt like a subgenre on YouTube for a while there.
Oh, did it? I didn't even notice that shit. I mean, yeah. Don't come at me about Mafia.
I mean, one, it's very, like, because we're at the point, like, a 10-year-old game now does not feel 10 years old way when I was a child. A 10-year-old game felt very, very different. Like, the time is collapsing around, like, how much he's aged, just inevitably as things get refined. But also, it's very, also, you've got YouTube compression, like, reducing, like, finer details of, like, more modern stuff. And then, obviously, you can cherry pick. You can cherry pick your footage. And again, like, Mafia would have been made in a fraction of Red Dead Redemption 2's budget.
An absolute fraction of the budget. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a big believer in games don't need to look better than what they have for the last 10 years.
But they did in 2012.
Yeah.
Especially if you can crank the settings up now.
Yeah, well, now all they need is just that more power behind them and a 4K resolution, and there you go. They look great. Titanfall looks great still. Tomb Raider, 2015. Looks amazing.
Turns out you're like, yeah, just turn the settings up and get smoother frame rates and stuff from PS4 or even PS3, 360 Europe. Not all of it, but a lot of it looks pretty good still. At least, like, good enough in a way that when you went, you know, from a PS2 to a PS1, the PS1 game suddenly did not look good enough.
Yeah, yeah, not at all. We don't have that generational leap anymore. It's all gradual, and it's all little things. And a lot of it is superfluous.
Although it is nice for occasion when you do, like, I'm going to probably make this into a topic at some point. I think I said that with Rob already. Yeah. It was nice when I was playing Death Stranding 2, and there were a couple of points where that game did make me just kind of just go, oh, whoa.
Yeah, I don't not appreciate good graphics. Like, I enjoy it. I mean, I'm a PC gamer at heart, so, you know, that's part and parcel, right, of pushing games when you get them.
But I bet if I went back and uploaded the PC version of Vanquish, it's not going to make me go, whoa, but it's also going to look good enough in a way that
absolutely
is not always the case.
And from someone that, you know, has a bit better of an insight into the industry like we do, to know what the difference between the modern game cost-wise and getting it looking as good as it does and a game from 10 years ago cost-wise and looking at it as it does now, I think, is it money well spent? Is it resources well spent? Is it crushing the industry? Do we spend less on games and maybe look a little less, realistic? And then just...
What if we go back to my dream, Huso, and, like, we have fewer open world games? And budgets can, like, constrain and, like, things can look prettier because you don't need to render entire fucking landscapes.
But I think there's tricks to do open world on a budget. They did it before.
Oh, there are.
You know, so... Just Cause. That's a massive fucking open game. It looks great. And it wasn't, it had problems, the game itself, but as far as an open world goes, it's really good. It's massive. They got that going on a budget that would be a tenth of anything Rockstar did.
Again, I do feel like we need fewer open world games now. We're getting into that. Like, it's like too many of the things I want to play now. And it's not just open world, it's just like everything's too long. Guys, the secret sauce, and I mean this sincerely to the bigger publishers,
is less. Is
more your budgets, make 10-hour long games that don't have to be open world.
Yep.
And you act like, I mean, I guess it's not a fair thing because, like, reviews just don't pay what they used to, if at all, at this point for freelancers. But, like, the first thing I am asking is, like, if a review key comes in, it's like, how long is it? Like, I. But I, even if I'm shopping, like I've got, I want to finish the game. I don't want to leave it hanging. If it is under 20 hours, that is a selling point at this point. Yep. Like I
even something like Clair Obscur, where it was what 30 hours. Ish.
Well, that was like 30 something for a game you expected to be 70. So yeah. Sounded like this
with a game that's using a Persona style system, you immediately expected going to be 100 hours. Considering
Persona 5 is like 100 hour.
it was nice that it clocked in at 30. Mass Effects, they were all 30 hour games. Like
put them all together. I was like, yeah, even like as much as I really like the Final Fantasy VII remakes, like the first Final Fantasy VII did everything in 50 hours on average.
Yeah. Yeah. Not 50 hours for 3 discs. Yeah.
I remember kind of getting the discs. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to stand by my, I would still like to see what the world would have been like if Grand Theft Auto, even if Shenmue would never like really influence that much, I still want to see what the trajectory would have been without Grand Theft Auto 3. And I think Yusei just wants the greener pastures of a world without Roblox.
Hey, I just want the world to be a better place. And that means destroying Roblox at the roots. It's
something else.
The crack-dealing hillbilly cousin of Minecraft that should be ejected.
It's like kind of wild that it got that big when Minecraft already existed.
Yeah.
I mean, Roblox has been around since like 2006, but it was like, just kind of blew up during COVID, even though Minecraft was so established at that point.
Yeah. Yes.
Anywho, so I'm going to tie a bow in that right there.
Yeah, destroying Roblox is a good place to destroy it.
Bullet tie. And on that note, so what have we got coming up on the site now that the year is starting to like really
start? Yeah, it's starting to ramp up. I've got my Disciples review that will be coming on the day this comes out. I've also going to have a Mario Tennis review.
So yeah, I told everybody that Nintendo was being looked over this episode.
And I'll have a Nintendo preview for Pokemon Poketopia or whatever it's called. It's their
That cannot be a legal name for something. That just sounds wrong.
it's their animal. It's Pokemon Animal Crossing. That's the gist. So yeah, I'll have that up all on the same day this comes up. So that's my immediate schedule.
Yeah. And I will have something, be it a review or something else, depending on how much time I have and if I keep on getting
errors,
performance issues with Dead Man.
Yeah.
So, which is going to be interesting because that means I'm going to be aware of what everybody else thought about it before I've finished.
I just avoid. That's what I do. I avoid.
I generally avoid, but some, especially if you listen to other podcasts like I do, like sometimes the stuff just kind of like sneaks in. I avoid the Metacritics, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that note, is it Huso 81 at the Blue Sky?
It is. No, it's just Huso at Blue Sky.
Oh, wow. You didn't even need a birth year there.
No. I got my actual right name. Early. And then, player2.net.au, of course.
Of course, I got Pretend Beard at the Blue Skies. It's in the nice name. And there's one place recently I tried to register that and somebody else got it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there are 7 billion people in the world. At some point, somebody's just going to think the same as
yeah.